Okay, it's November 10th, 2022. 2206 hours, Ward Green here. I did just make another very long video. Fortunately, I get to do it again and make it a lot shorter. But I wasn't recording again, probably a double click. It's a malfunction of my mouse that double clicks really fast. Even when I click once, it does a double click and then it stops after it starts it. It stops the recording. So I didn't. I needed to check the running clock to see if it was working. I didn't do that. I wanted to talk about insoles and boots again because I had to try on my boots again, my Danners, just to see how good they are and how well they fit. It's the full leather upper. Can I get them in the? Where are they? Wait a minute. Oh yeah, I've almost got them in. In the frame, there they are. It's a full leather boot upper. It's just not broken in yet. So, but they're so comfortable. They're so comfortable that I wanted to put them on again just to see whether they really are as comfortable as I thought they were. Because the other day I didn't want to take them off. They felt so good. But they're not broken in yet, so they're probably going to be uncomfortable after wearing them for a while. I'm starting to realize not now. But I wanted to mention socks as well. When you're trying to fit a boot to your foot, you need to consider what socks you're going to wear as well. Socks make a big difference in terms of the thickness and the type of material the sock is made of. How, you know, in term and I mean as far as how that will affect its fit and how good it feels when you're using the boot by walking it or the shoe by walking in it. So, I mean, it determines a lot of things what knowing what socks you're going to use and deciding what socks. So I decided I was using a heavier smart wool sock for these boots, and that determined that the best combination so far that I've found is the Superfeet Green in the bottom of the boot, and on top of that, the original Danner insoles, which since the Superfeet Green has got a nice contour that pretty well matches the Danner insole, it fits in nicely. The bottom of the Super Green, the Superfeet Green, I mean. Which, and the Superfeet Green, by the way, are one of the most popular insoles on the market, and they're very expensive too. They're about $50, but they're quite expensive, but they're very popular because they're so comfortable. They have a good solid arch support and cushion. I got the ones that were for high arches because I have high arches on my feet. So I got the high arch. I'm looking for high arch products, and I found another product today that was a foam insert type with more of a foam cushion. But the Danner insoles are very cushiony too. So when I put them on top of the Superfeet Green, I have a lot of cushion there. That's why I like the feeling when I'm walking on these. But when you're wearing another aspect of this, when you're wearing insoles, every boot, even without adding any insoles, has an incline to it. Look, it'll drop a certain height from heel to toe. It will usually drop a certain distance, or I mean, they could be level, but running shoes typically have a drop of some kind because you want to be leaning forward as you're running. So the shoes are designed that way, and boots that have a heel on them, they're going to have a forward lean as well, right? They're leaning. And the amount of that lean will be affected by the insoles you put in there. If the insole has a thicker heel, that's going to affect it. And you can get them with thicker heels for more padding in the heel, but that's going to lean you forward more, so you have to think about that. If that feels good to you or not before you buy it, if you're buying online, you're not going to try it on. You need to consider these things carefully. But I found some more insoles today that were online that I hadn't seen before that were only $30, only $30, but that's a lot of money. But $30, and they had more of a foam cushion, it sounds like. And yet they were the best rated for high arches. That's right. That's the other thing. In one of the reviews I read, these were given the top rating for a person with high arches in their feet. So that's the one I wanted to try. And the other one is another one made by Superfeet. This other one's not made by Superfeet. I forget the company, but the other one that I haven't mentioned yet that is made by Superfeet is a very thinner profile for tight shoes where you know what let's say you know what sock you're going to wear, and even with those socks, the shoes are going to be tight. And so you can make them a little less tight by putting in a thinner profile insole. So that's what this other one is for. Is for tight shoes. So I'm going to try. I'm aware that this is going to give me more flexibility in terms of what insoles I can put into my shoes and how I can get myself out of a bind, so to speak, literally too, I guess, but how to get my foot out of a bind by rotating my insoles and switching it around to make it work. But I'm not going to change the insoles. You know, I'm not saying you should change your insoles every time you change your socks to a different type of sock. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, if possible, find out what, it's a good idea to know what type of sock you're likely to wear in that boot. That's all I'm saying. There might be a little bit of flexibility in that. And how tight you lace your laces matters. It's very important when you're breaking in the boots too, I think. It's more important then, probably, but how tight you lace your boots is an art in terms of how tight you want the laces in the body of the in the instep and also in the around the ankle. You can possibly have them tighter or looser in those different places at the time you're lacing them up. But I was outside today. I wanted to talk a bit about the work I did outside. I went out and I found my door frames that I painted in that green, whatever, waterproofing material that you put on. What's it called? I almost had it there on the tip of my tongue. That stuff you paint posts with when you're putting them in the ground. It's green and you paint your wood with it before you put them underground so it prevents rot. That green stuff, I think I painted on my door frames. Either that or they came like that. I'm not sure which, but they had sort of gotten a bit washed away. That anti-rot paint or stain that was on there has gotten washed away a little bit as they've lain outside in the snow or in the carport where there is occasionally some snow. But I'll just probably be staining them anyway. But I'm going to be, hopefully, I'm thinking I might install them in the doorway that's there in the carport to prevent the snow coming in. But that would mean I'll have to build my own door. I've got some great hinges, though, I could use. But I'll have to build my own door. But I could use the ash for that, the ash I've got in the basement. Except I have to allocate how much I'm using for that and how much I'm using for the wall. And I don't need really thick walls, so I can really sort of skimp on material if I'm wise about how I design it. I don't need huge, heavy-duty walls on this carport because it doesn't have a door on the front. It's just got a tarp, anyway, canvas on the front door. So it's not locked or anything. Maybe it should be, but it's not. Maybe eventually I can lock it if I can put a door on the front, though. So I want it strong enough that it could be lockable, I guess. That's a good idea. Yeah, it's a good idea. I just thought of that now. Yeah, that's why it's good to talk things out. And the more people you talk to, like in this case, maybe I'm talking to more than one person. So it's a good thing because it makes you think harder. But I'm thinking about, I have to allocate, I want to save some of my wood, the ash that I got from that big tree. I want to save some of it to build the console in the studio. I still haven't built my... I've got a lot of wood down there, though, in the basement that I could use for that. I've got Jatoba. I could build a Jatoba console because I've got Jatoba in the basement. Yeah, I've got quite a bit of Jatoba. And I have a ton of oak. I mean, that's true. Jatoba is the Brazilian cherry. That's what it is. Sometimes called that because that's what it's sort of equivalent to. It's much harder than our cherry. It's a much stronger wood. Heavier, probably, too, I think. But just a much harder wood. And it has that a red color to it. I just thought of that now. That why don't I use some of the wood that I have down there? Because I have so much wood down there. I just never think of using it. But you have to use it sooner or later. That's the thing. I even got a piece of wood that a guy gave me that was the most decorative kind of the burl part of the stump or whatever that was. But it was a horseshoe shape of wood. It's a piece of wood that's quite big. It's sort of a horseshoe shape. I mean, but it's much bigger than a horseshoe. It's about, 2 feet by something or 3 feet by something. I don't know. It's fairly big. And it's not got any purpose right now. So I've got to think about that, how that could be used. How to design something with that. Because he gave it to me thinking I would be able to figure out how to use it. He had faith that I would be able to figure something out. He didn't even know me, though. So how did he know? It was a piece of wood that he had no use for, but he obviously thought that somebody could do something with it. So that's another thing that I can turn around. Oh, by the way, I figured out a way to make a welding table out of a 16-gauge 2x4 sheet of steel clamped onto my adjustable height welding table that I just bought, my DeWalt welding table. I've clamped it on so I can extend the size of that table quite a bit that way. Make it basically not 2 feet bigger, but maybe a foot and a half bigger in terms of width, or at least a foot bigger, but quite a bit wider. And I've got that clamped down there now. I'm waiting for a rainy day maybe when I'll do some plasma cutting, or I'll sharpen my chainsaws or something like that. But I'm waiting for that right now. I'm thinking I want to cut down a branch, a big branch off one of my trees too, but I don't have a sharp blade. That's what's stopping me. I do have a sharp blade probably, but I want to sharpen the dull ones before I do anything. And I don't have anything that... Well, do I have something I could cut it with? Probably I do. It's probably sharp enough, but... Yeah, I want to make sure I have a sharper blade before I try that, though. But there's some branch... A branch just sticking out that I could just cut it off. It's just going to fall. Just if I just, undercut it a little bit to prevent it from, tearing a big piece off on the bottom, it'll just fall. If I cut it from the top, it's just going to fall. Very easy job to do that. And it's got some nice, that's got some nice wood for burning at some point. I'm not sure how heavy that wood is. I think it's pretty heavy, pretty dense. What was I talking about? Yeah, I've got to clean those door frames up and think about how to use the ash. But I think I was talking about the insoles because I want to. I was saying, yeah, how comfortable they were. These boots were so comfortable. And I know what I was saying also in the previous video that never occurred. I was saying I now have all these fantastic boots. I've got 3 new pairs of shoes, including the Moabs, the Danners, the Mountains, which are the Mountain 600. I've got the Moab 3s, the Mountain 600, and the Gel Cumulus 22, which are excellent running shoes. All these shoes I've got, now they're all brand new, they're beautiful, and I don't want to use them, so I'm wearing my work boots, my old Merrells. That's what I'm wearing for work boots. They're my work boots. I'm afraid to wear anything new because it'll just get ruined. So all these, I got all these brand new shoes. I have more shoes than I know what to do with. I've got my 20-year-old, almost 20-year-old Spyra shoes for riding my bike. They're in great shape too, but they're too tight for walking around in. But I've got all these really nice shoes in great condition, none of which I'm going to wear, basically. But I'll be cycling them in. I'll be getting them in. I'll be breaking in my Danners right now, and then I'll be breaking in the Merrells. I'll be wearing them for jobs. I'll be wearing them indoors to break them in or doing something to get them broken in. But I won't want to wear them in environments where they're going to be damaged, you know. And if I'm doing welding, I'll wear my old ones, probably. That's what I'll wear, right? I won't wear new ones when I'm doing welding. So the old Merrells have just got a suede. They're a suede. They're not full grain leather, but they're very, very thick. Like, the uppers on those are very heavy and they don't flex well. The old Merrells are clunky. They don't really flex very well. And these Danners, I like them because they're full grain leather, which is very thick and heavy. They're going to take a while to break them in, but I like the protection they give me. So sooner or later, once they get older, at some point they'll become my work boots and they'll be phenomenal, I think. That's the idea. So I got to get them broken in. And there's the Moabs, which are the Merrells. When I talked about the fact that I had replaced, I did this in the previous non-existent video that I tried to make. I talked about this too, that I put the Danner insole on top of the Superfeet Green. And Superfeet Green are just the most popular because they're so comfortable. They're very cushiony, and then the Danners are actually very cushiony too. So you got on the Danner that came with the boot. It came in the boot, the Danner insole. It actually has a good cushion in it, but if I just wear the Danner boots with no other insert, just the original insole, they're too loose. Like they feel like there's nothing in the sole. There's no cushion. It feels like no cushion at all. But if I add the Danner on top of the Superfeet Green, they feel really great. So now I have another insole that I've two more insoles I've ordered too. That's what I wanted to talk about. And also the fact that my Merrell Moabs, I've now put the old Merrells insoles underneath the new Merrell insoles that came with the boots, so those have a double insole and they fit better now because they have two complete insoles instead of that three-quarter on top of the old on top of the new ones, on top of the just on top of the insole that came with the boot. I did have the three-quarter insole, but you know, they don't stay put either. They came, one of them came loose, so they're not going to work as well as a full insole. And also, I wouldn't cut. There's another thing I wanted to mention. I would not cut an insole if you can avoid it, because you can't use it in the full size shoe again. You know, so I'm trying to avoid cutting them. I'm trying to find ones that fit in the boots as they are. That's the thing. It's better, and it just happened that the Superfeet Green fit perfectly in my Danners, and the other Superfeet that I have, which are the Adapt Run Max, they're phenomenal, I think, but I don't need them now. So I'm just using, maybe I should use them instead of the Superfeet Green. That's possible. In the Danners, it might give me a little more room in there, but that would be maybe after I break them in a bit. I don't know. But I've got those just sitting in the closet now, those Adapt Run Max, which are Superfeet, and they're my favorite of the ones I've bought so far, but I'm not using them right now. The other ones I'm ordering are a thinner Superfeet, which is for tight shoes. It's good. I think it's a great thing to have is an assortment. It's great to have an assortment of different inserts, because you never know when you're going to need one. And I think that it's good to choose which sock you're going to wear with a particular boot or shoe before you start putting in the insoles, because you want to try it with the correct sock and you want to basically stick with that sock as much as you can, that type of sock, when you're wearing those shoes, so that you know they're going to fit, because the sock really does matter in terms of the thickness and the type of material and everything. So I've also ordered another type of insole, which is a more cushiony insole, and it costs only $30, but it was the top rated for feet with high arches in one of the reviews online, one of the independent reviews of insoles. So I'm working still. I was so excited today about the insoles. I was very excited about insoles today. And I got my new foot powder, which is the most aromatic. Oh, I love it. It's so great. It smells so fantastic. I mean, this is my revised version 3. With the extra tea tree and peppermint and rose geranium oil, and also orange and lemon added. A very small amount of orange and lemon, but if that works, I might add more of that. I don't know how that's going to be in terms of, you know, being allergic. That's the thing. If you put in citrus, you may not want that. Or I may not want that either. I have pretty sensitive skin, so if it's not bothering me, I think that's a good reason to share it with other people. I've got the idea that I might make my own waterproofing. That's what I talked about also. I might make waterproofing for my boots. I already had tried a 70% beeswax, 30% coconut oil. But I might make something that's got more coconut oil, or I might make my own waterproofing of some kind. You know, based on the idea that I know that other people do that. Like, there's Nick Wax. They make a waterproof tech wash and things like that. That's for garments more than leather, but they make a whole host of products. And I'm thinking of, I should develop my own recipes for that too, that I can share with people. And you know, I'm not trying to make money, or I'm not interested in selling products, and you know, then you have to deal with, you know, if you're a very big seller, if you sell a lot of products, you have to worry about returns all the time. You have to deal with returns and all sorts of things. I mean, you have to deal with all kinds of things. You know, it's just a huge job. If you just share a recipe with somebody online, that's how I got my recipes up till now. Well, no, that's not how I got this. I reverse engineered the foot powder to get this one. But I mean, online, for toothpaste, I got my recipe online. And I mean, I think, I know, I just think life's too short not to experience, you know, what it means to develop your own products. And also, I don't think it's good to let somebody else get knowledge for you. I mean, to miss out on the idea of learning, and the idea of getting knowledge for yourself by developing products, by learning about how to make your own products and preserve your own shoes and all that sort of thing. I really am interested in, it's interesting, I wasn't, when I was younger, interested in caring about how long, I didn't care how long my shoes lasted, or I didn't care about any of that. It's really interesting. Oh, my wife taught me, my late wife taught me this. She taught me by her example of how well she looked after things. She had things, she would be doing things for years, and then suddenly one day she'd go into a cupboard and take out some object that was there for years and had not been used or seen in years. And it's some device that she'd bought for a certain purpose that she would use once and put it away again. But I mean, she had a great ability to do that, and that's what taught me a lot about looking after things, and about having the tools too. About having, I already knew about tools, and I already had a tool set and a workshop, a toolbox or whatever, multiple toolboxes. I knew about tools that you don't always have to use them all the time to have them. It's important to have the tools on hand. But she also was very careful about how she cared for her clothing, and she was just a great example in that way. And she cared about her shoes, and she didn't want to ruin the shoes. She didn't want to get any damage to her shoes, and she was very good about that, very careful. And I just learned from it. I learned a lot from it, and now I'm like that. I'm trying to make my shoes and boots last longer. I'm going to try to, you know, treat them well. And the older ones, I'm going to use them for. But I'm going to do that with my clothing too, of course. Try and use older garments for doing jobs where they could get ruined. What was I doing today? I was thinking. Well, I did the rust treatment the other day. I just thought about something. It was something to do with. Treatment. I was out today, as I said, looking at the door frame that I bought many years ago. This is bought decades ago. like at the time my wife and I built the deck, probably is when I bought those things, which I don't even remember when that was. Maybe that might have been in 87 when we built that deck, actually, come to think of it. Because we were building it at the time when I bought the tape deck. So I was building a deck and I was buying a deck. I think I remember this. It may have been around the same time, around 87. So that deck is like 35 years old, maybe, something like that. Yeah, 35 years old, maybe. And I maintain it, but I've got to think about, you know, what was I thinking was, I bought the door frame back then, I think, sometime around that time, maybe. And it's just three pieces, the two side pieces, and then the lintel or the thing, the header at the top. And they fit together because they're mitered. It's got mitered corners in the top corners so that the pieces fit together. But I'll have to shorten it to make it the right height, possibly. But it's not really that crucial because I can put a spacer at the top or something. If I don't shorten it, it's better not to shorten it because then I can reuse it for something else, right? So if I just put a spacer in, I can take the spacer out later if I need to reuse it. I just thought of that now too. But the idea of putting a door in it, I have to build my own door. So I got to figure out what kind of door I want. It doesn't have to be a real fancy door. Just, you know, you could just do planks and then a diagonal to hold it together. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. That would work. Well, you need two diagonals usually for that, right? You usually have an X that keeps it all together. That's kind of like a gate. The door to your yard might be built like that, but this is just for my carport. I can build it to make it look nice. The X can be on the back side or whatever too, but it can look really nice. I don't have to use that design either. I can build it some other way. It can have perimeter support, and then it can have still cross bracing in the middle too. It can have all sorts of different ideas, or it could just be a double layer of planking, and so it could be horizontal planking running this way on one side and then vertical planks on the other side, and it could be made like that, but that takes more wood. If I could resaw the ash or some wood thin enough, I could keep the thickness of the door down and still build it that way and not waste wood. But the thinner you saw the wood, the more cuts you have, and therefore the more sawdust and the more wasted wood as well. So it's a balance in the engineering process of deciding how much cutting you want to do and how much sawdust you want to create versus how strong you want the door to be, you know, as opposed to being lightweight, for example. You know, heavy or lightweight and lots of cuts versus fewer cuts, you know, these are trade-offs. And I haven't designed, the console in the studio. So all these things can be thought about now. I can start to get going on that. I was out in the yard today and I raked up two big wheelbarrows full of leaves again, packing them into the wheelbarrow so that I get a lot of leaves picked up that way. But that's because I went out so late in the day, I didn't have time to do more than that, and my energy level probably wasn't as high as it would have been if I hadn't been working and going out. I rode my bike to the mail today to pick up my supplements, so my energy level goes down a bit because of that. And I just didn't get out soon enough to get home early enough to have enough light to do any more than that either before it was getting dark. So the other thing was I was out there measuring the door. I got the door frame measured so I know what it is, and I found those door frame pieces. I've got the rough opening measured now. I know exactly what that rough opening is. And the other day, and I think today, I also measured the back wall, the sort of in the same place as that door, but a little bit to one side of that door. There's a wall that I want to put in there, possibly. So that's the other thing. I'm still measuring that to figure out and thinking about how do you install the wall. So I'm thinking of probably attaching the wall to the central post that I have supporting the deck, and putting these heavy nails, these bigger nails possibly through the post too, to make it, these are the 12 inch, this is a 12 inch nail, 12 inch nail. to support that post a little bit better than what it was supported in the past, attach it to the deck a bit better with a couple of 12-inch nails or spikes that came with the landscaping equipment. I'm going to bring the landscaping plastic, whatever it's called, edging material. It was out there getting all warped and bent, and so I got to put that in the basement so it doesn't get any further damage to it or whatever, you know, deterioration is happening to it out there. I need to put that in the basement after I clean it up a bit, and there's a lot of work to do. And I've got to think about how I'm going to protect this wheeled cart that's out there sitting there getting rusty. And if I put a wall in there, the cart has to come right out anyway. Like, I can't leave the cart there. So I got to get the cart out of there. Maybe I can't do it right now because I might be able to push my lawnmower forward enough to get it out. I don't know. But the other advantage of getting this cart out of there, like, I just stand, even if I just stand the cart up, if I could stand it up vertically, and I don't know if I can do that the way it is now, but if I could figure out how to do that in the future, if I could stand it up vertically and turn it in a certain direction, that would give me more space for the lawnmower. The tractor, I can back it up more. And that gives me more room to walk around the car. So I can redesign this whole space and put a wall in there at the same time. Well, maybe that shouldn't be a wall, I just realized. Maybe that should be a door too. That's a good idea because then I can get the cart out through the door. That's a better idea, because then I don't have to get the cart out some other way. I just thought of that now. Why build a wall when I can build a... The reason why is because I don't have two sets of hinges. That's the reason. Hinges are expensive, especially if you're putting... But then, if it's a door, though, it doesn't have to be as heavy as a wall. That's the other thing. I could build a door that is substantially lighter weight, I think, than a wall would be, and save wood that way. And then I don't need as... Also, if I build a lighter door, if I build a fairly light door, I don't need... I don't need the biggest style or the heaviest duty of the hinges. The hinges don't have to be the heaviest duty. You don't have to be capable of performing that, the function of heavy duty service. So there's a lot of thoughts now that are coming into this. This is how you do things when you're designing things. Your mind is, I mean, this is the best way to do it, when your mind is really busy with all sorts of thoughts and ideas, and when you're changing your mind back and forth between different thoughts. That's what is the best way to do design, is to have an open mind that just, you know, just flows with ideas, just completely fluid, and also, you know, is thinking about the reasons why everything should be done a certain way, you know, very, you know, following through, thinking about one design idea and trying to take it through to the completion in your mind and see whether it works better than another idea taken to completion. So that's it. I'm wearing my boots, trying to break them in. I've got a lot of great shoes and boots that I'm never going to wear, it sounds like, it seems like. I've got these old boots that I'm wearing again. I never would have worn the old boots either if I hadn't bought the new ones. You know, that's the other irony. I'd still be wearing sandals. But because I bought the new shoes, I got to wear something that's to justify having bought the new shoes. So I'm wearing the old boots, which is very interesting. I never would have been wearing those. I don't believe I would have been wearing the old boots. And I keep everything smelling great with this foot powder. I'm thinking about developing waterproof. I will seriously think about that. If I have time, as long as I have time, I'm going to be doing these things. Like, I'll be thinking about the waterproofing substance, solution, whatever you want to call it, the gunk or whatever we're going to call it, the waterproofing slop, whatever it is you're going to put on the boots. I don't know what it is. What are we going to call it? Something it's got to be a good name, I guess, if we make a good product. But, well, this I call this the Kaolin Black Rose, KBR, because it's got kaolin clay in it, and it's got the black walnut hull powder, and it's got the rose geranium oil, so I called it Kaolin Black Rose because of that. I like that name, too, but it's just because I didn't want to call it a name any longer than that. But, oh, that smells fantastic. Like, it smells like roses, but, oh, it's just, but it's not, oh, it's so perfect. The tea tree oil's there. I'm probably getting the peppermint, and I'm getting a hint of orange and lemon, probably, but I can't really separate them all out. It just smells fantastic. It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, every time I open that, I just can't wait to put it in my shoe, in my boots. I put it in the shoes, right? But you don't have to use it in the shoes, or you don't need much of it unless you're doing really a lot of heavy work. We're going to be getting some cold weather, I think. It rained tomorrow, maybe. They're saying they're expecting, I think we're expecting rain tomorrow, but it's only a small probability. It's not a high probability, but it's more than 50%. But then after that, okay, now they're saying another day of rain coming up. It's snow. Snow is coming for the first time, they're saying now, on the 13th. They weren't saying that before. That's the first I've seen that of that. That could be significant. But it's only 49% probability. We don't have any high probability yet, so. But it looks like Saturday is forecast to be good, though. It's just not very cold. But it looks like the next Monday and Tuesday might be very cold and also very dry. But if we get snow before that, that snow will still be there, though. So I won't be able to work anymore on raking, for example. So I've got to get the raking done. That's the job for tomorrow, I guess. And then the door, I can design doors and walls and stuff. There can be snow on the ground for that. That's not going to stop me, right? I got to think about all these things. What order to do everything in to optimize the weather. And if it's raining and snowing, I can be working on waterproofing and, you know, boiling things on my stove. Like I think Nickwax and many other companies too originally started by mixing up a pot of some kind of concoction on their stove, and that's how they did it, right? That's how they developed their solutions for the waterproofing. So I could do I'm not going to do the same thing as they did. I don't want to. I want to do it hopefully better than they did, get some products that are even better, but I want to share it with people if I can make any progress also. But I mean, you know, not everybody is, so far in the world today, not everybody is interested in doing their own thing. You know, a lot of people just want to buy products off the shelf. And I was the same for many years, so I understand that. It's just for those of us who do want to work on things like that, I want to share what I know. And I'm just going to be, you know, interested to see, you know, I'll be sharing it, but it'll be rare, but it'll be very, very rewarding when I do meet somebody eventually, possibly, who is interested and who's doing the same thing. There'll be an incredible sharing, exchange of information and knowledge that's possible when we're all building our own products or working on our own construction and, you know, making our own concoctions for waterproofing and making our own foot powder. And when we're all doing that, there's a greater possibility for sharing knowledge, I would think. But I mean, it is true. It is the case. I'm convinced of that, it's like a critical mass, right? In a nuclear reaction, you don't want to get a critical mass because it's going to mean a nuclear explosion. But you know, the Canadian reactors, in the reactors, they only used natural uranium, so you could never get a critical mass. And the reaction was controlled by the deuterium, so if it leaked out, there was no reaction. So they couldn't melt down. The Canadian reactors can't melt down the way enriched uranium can melt down if it gets too hot and gets together. The reactor can melt down. It's enriched. You could even maybe have a nuclear explosion with enriched uranium, although it might be unlikely. It's still possible. But if the coolant leaks out of a nuclear reactor, then there's no way to cool it. It gets hot, it melts down. If the coolant leaks out of a Canadian reactor, the water is what's causing the nuclear reaction to proceed. So if the water, if the heavy water in the case of a Canadian reactor leaks out, there's no reaction. It stops the reaction, so it's safe. Canadian reactors were designed that way, and the only difference was they had to produce the heavy water, that's all, to use in the reactor, instead of having to produce enriched uranium, which is far more radioactive, for one thing. But eventually you get a lot of radioactivity that comes about, you know, due to the using up of the uranium, and the Canadian reactors become, you know, highly radioactive with plutonium and things like that, the byproducts of the fission, of nuclear fission in the reactor. And the heavy water is the thing that makes them safe. Anyway, it's the fact that the heavy water is necessary for the whole thing to proceed, and it doesn't, it's not necessary when you have enriched uranium, that because you don't have to slow the neutrons down. You've got enough neutrons there that, you know, with enriched uranium, that you don't have to slow them down in order to have a nuclear reaction, a chain reaction, I mean. Whereas with the heavy water, it's needed in order to slow down the neutrons so you get enough neutron capture that you can have a chain reaction carrying on there. Not a chain reaction, but a sustainable reaction. Not a chain reaction like an explosion. What's that called? A critical. Yeah, a critical chain reaction. It's not critical. It doesn't go critical. Is that the word critical? There's another word maybe for when you have a nuclear explosion. What's it called? Is it critical? Let's look it up. Oh yeah, I was trying this. I'm trying to get this program PLSV installed on Apple Silicon using Wineskin, and I had it running before too, but I'm trying to get it running more fully, but it always ran. But it just, I can't change the, like here it is right here. Let's just put it over here. That's what it looks like. Oh, I just lost it. Where did it go? It disappears. Why does it disappear? Where is it? Okay, I'm going to bring it up to the top if it's possible here. Where is it? It's disappearing. Why? That's no good. It's no good. It's disappeared. It disappeared. Where is it? I don't see it anywhere. This is strange. Oh, there it is. Okay, so maybe it just doesn't like this monitor. It doesn't like that monitor. It won't even go onto it. Strange. Yeah, it doesn't like it. Okay, I can't actually bring it onto that monitor. That's interesting. I can't show you it, but well, I can drag it there and show you. Yeah, I can show you. So let me get the program back that we're looking at. This is it. Yeah. Okay. So if I drag it, let's see. Let's put this over here. There we go. I can show you this. That's what it looks like. I can get that running, and I can get this part of it running as well. I can't put them both on at the same time because they disappear, but But when I have this one, it's got the settings. There's a, that's where it says settings there. There's a place where I can click and I can change the visibility parameters, but I can't change them on this version of it because it's not running properly. So I've been experimenting to see if I can get that working a little bit better there, but it's not working. So anyway, it's not working up till now. It doesn't work yet. But the critical nuclear reactor, let's get that up on the screen again. Dictionary, GW Library. DOS box. Critical nuclear reaction. Criticality. Well, that's the okay. When a nuclear reactor is working, it's called critical. Yeah, sufficient number of neutrons. Okay. So that I knew critical was something. I just didn't know what it was. But what's supercritical? Is that where it goes? Okay, that's where. When they're starting up a nuclear reactor, that might not be every nuclear. That might not apply to every nuclear reactor either. It's something to realize. But what is the chain reaction of a it's a chain reaction. Yeah, that's when you carry on producing more neutrons. But what let's see, chain reaction, what's it called when it's a nuclear bomb? Uncontrolled. It's uncontrolled. It's an uncontrolled chain reaction. Let's see, what's it called in a, I just don't know the terminology for it. There's got to be a word for it. I spelled it wrong, hang on. What's it called? Like, what's the technical name for? Well, it's an explosion, right? But it's a critical. It's certainly critical. It goes critical, but it's more than that, because a nuclear reactor is critical too. But it doesn't blow up. Hopefully, anyway, it doesn't blow up. So. What's it called? You know, like, it's a fission. I'm talking about fission type reactions. Supercriticality. Yeah. It's an exponential growth. It's supercritical, I guess. Yeah, that's probably the proper term for it then, maybe. Supercritical. It's a critical mass. That's right, the critical mass. So you can have a critical mass is the, you have enough of that material and it's radioactive enough that you don't, you know, you bring it together. Like a bomb usually works with two pieces brought together. And when you have a critical mass brought together, that's when it explodes. So it's critical mass in that sense. If you separate the two parts, it won't blow up because there's not enough neutrons. But if you bring them together, it becomes critical, supercritical. But it's a critical mass. It just sustains the reaction. Whereas when they're not close enough together, it's not critical. There's no heat even. It doesn't generate anything. So that's why critical is the same word used in a bomb and in a reactor. It's the same word, critical. But the point of criticality, or the how supercritical it is, that's the issue that differentiates between a bomb and a reactor. How supercritical is it? How many extra neutrons are there? how exponentially, you know, is the reaction growing exponentially? If it is, then it's a bomb. If it's growing exponentially, if it's not controlled, uncontrolled reaction that's growing exponentially, that's a bomb. Okay, so anyway, yeah, I looked up Tartan too, and Ashdod and Sargon. I think I better call this video finished at this point. I looked that up today, and it turned out, in the article Moses, I talk about this in parts one and two, I think, about Isaiah and about Sargon and about what the dates are for these things. That's in the article Moses. Anyway, this is Ward Green. It's November 10th, 2022. It's 22:56 hours. And have a great night. Once again, this is the last video for today. But I love you. I want you to enjoy your life. And I'm always talking to my little children to tell them how much I love them and that I want them to learn what they can from me and from other sources too, of course, but I mean hopefully from good sources, and that's why I'm trying to give information as well as I can, and as far as I've learned it, the way that I've learned it, so as to benefit my little children in the way that I can, to the greatest degree that I can. So thanks for watching, thanks for listening, bye for now.